Attention, attention. This is History Lost in Time.
And welcome to episode 60 of the History Lost in Time podcast. This podcast is available in German and English on YouTube, Spotify, and podcast.de, with a social media presence on Blue Sky and Instagram. Note for Spotify users, you can find the latest episodes on Spotify. For all episodes since the beginning, please visit podcast.de and YouTube.
The topic of this episode.
June 1967. The heat over the Golan Heights shimmers, the ground is bone dry. In the distance, silhouettes emerge that seem to belong to another decade. A familiar angular profile here, a tall bulbous hull there. It feels like an echo from 1944, yet we are in the midst of the Six-Day War. On one side, Syrian Panzer Force, the last veterans of the Wehrmacht. On the other, Israeli Super Shermans, armed to the teeth with French technology. In today's episode, we examine one of the most curious battles in tank history. How did German equipment end up in the Levant? And why were machines that should have been in a museum still fighting for supremacy in one of the most fiercely contested regions of the world?
Political agenda and background.
None.
The sources that were used.
For this episode, I am relying on a mix of online sources. The last time the Shermans had clashed with the Panzer Force, Stuk III's and Jagdpanzer Force had been in 1945, and the battlefield had been Europe. At that time, the Panzer IV and the M4 Sherman were roughly equal, two medium tanks with good 75mm and 76mm guns respectively, medium armor and medium mobility. The Sturmgeschütz III and Jagdpanzer IV had advantages in terms of low profile and main gun, but the M4 Shermans were turret equipped, while the German tank destroyers could only fire forward. However, the M4 Sherman proved to have significant potential for upgrades, while the German models were nearing the end of their development cycle. The Panzer IV originated in the late 1930s, and it was simply no longer possible to install more armor or larger guns. The Stuk III was based on the Panzer III, and the Jagdpanzer IV was the tank destroyer version of the Panzer IV, so it too had reached the limits of its capabilities. The Sherman, on the other hand, which had initially started with the same short 75mm M3 gun already fitted to the M3 Lee, had proven remarkably upgradable even during the war years. The Americans fitted a long 76mm gun, and the British converted some of their Shermans into Fireflies with a 76.2mm 17-pounder gun. While the armor remained the same, this significantly increased firepower. So how did these two World War II veterans end up in a war in the Middle East in the 1960s? Let's start with the Israeli Shermans. It might sound strange today, but in the first decades of its existence, Israel wasn't supported with money and military equipment from the US as it is today. In the early days, the Israelis had to buy or organize everything they could find. Among the curious early weapon systems they used were Czechoslovakian Avia S-199 fighter planes, which were nothing more than German ME-109s married to a Yumo engine intended for bombers. Israeli soldiers also used numerous German Karabiner 98K rifles as firearms in the 1948-49 War of Independence. In the 1950s, the Israelis scoured numerous scrapyards and military depots across Europe, acquiring, among other things, a large number of old American M4 Sherman tanks. France proved to be a neutral and objective arms supplier and actively assisted in modernizing these Shermans. The result was the M50 Sherman, equipped with an improved 75mm gun, originally developed for the French AMX-13. Approximately 300 Shermans were modernized in this way. In the 1960s, this upgrade was pushed even further. around 180 Shermans received a shortened 105mm gun, originally designed for the French AMX 30. Modern technology, including a large muzzle brake, but especially the wide hull, which allowed for a larger turret, made it possible to marry this gun to the old Sherman. With this weapon, these M51 Shermans were even capable of engaging modern Soviet T-55 and T-62 tanks head-on. The heat ammunition used could penetrate conventional steel armor even at long ranges. Furthermore, the old American optics were replaced with modern French optics. However, the Sherman's armor was not improved. They themselves remained very vulnerable. Nevertheless, in combination with British Centurions and American M48 Pattons, they could fight very effectively from the second line. The Shermans that Israel deployed in 1967 were essentially still Shermans, but equipped with modern guns. While fragile, they posed a threat even to modern main battle tanks. In modern lingo, they were basically glass cannons. So that explains the Shermans in Israel, but how did Panzer IVs end up in Syria? Just like Israel, Syria also purchased equipment from Europe in the 1950s. And before the Soviet Union became the main supplier to the Syrian armed forces, the Syrians bought up everything that was lying around in depots. Here too, France was a neutral supplier. The French provided the Syrians with captured German equipment. Czechoslovakia did the same, and in the 1960s, the Spanish dictator Franco also sold off a considerable amount of old Wehrmacht vehicles. By 1967, the Syrians thus had around 60 Panzer IV tanks, some Stuk III assault guns based on the Panzer III, and some Jagdpanzer IV tank destroyers at their disposal. However, these remained in their original configuration and were not modernized. Maintenance also left much to be desired. The engines could at best be described as unreliable. Although the Syrians already had Soviet support at that time, such as T-34-85 and T-55 tanks, a certain German network existed in Egypt and Syria, and German military equipment, albeit outdated, was a good fit. In Syria, Alois Brunner, formerly Adolf Eichmann's right-hand man, was active. He advised the government under Hafez al-Assad on building up the domestic intelligence service. Methods of the Gestapo were adopted by the Syrian Muhabarat. In Egypt, at the time allied with Syria, the German presence was even stronger under President Nasser. There, former Wehrmacht officer Wilhelm Farmbacher served as a military advisor. Former Goebbels associate Johann von Leers headed anti-Israeli foreign propaganda using the pseudonym Omar Amin, and numerous German rocket engineers such as Rolf Engel developed missile programs targeting Israel. The Germans brought experience and, unlike the USA or the Soviet Union, expected no political concessions. Furthermore, the common enemy, Jewish Israel, forged a bond between the German Nazis and the Arabs. The use of old Wehrmacht equipment ensured that the Germans present in both countries could effectively train the Arabs on machines they were familiar with. How did these weapons fare in the Six-Day War of 1967? The M51's performance was surprisingly good. While the tank remained vulnerable and suffered losses, thanks to its superior heat ammunition, the M51 Sherman was able to destroy Arab T-55s head-on, even at ranges of up to 2,000 meters. In the Yom Kippur War of 1973, the Shermans even managed to destroy T-62s head-on. The Arabs, who had expected to be superior to the Israelis with their older Shermans, thanks to modern Soviet equipment, were shocked. For the Soviet Union, which had supplied its most advanced equipment, this was an embarrassing moment. Soviet analysis revealed that the Israelis' optics were superior and that conventional steel armor simply could not stop heat ammunition, another reason for the development of composite armor, which was introduced with the T-64. It also turned out that Israeli training was superior to Arab training, and that the use of modern technology alone does not guarantee victory, which is ultimately not a very new insight. The Syrians deployed their Wehrmacht tanks on the Golan Heights. After shelling Israel from there, The Israelis launched an attack in which the M50 and M51 Shermans also encountered the old Wehrmacht tanks. Due to their age and condition, the Syrians had more or less dug them in, turning them into bunkers. The tanks' guns, all 75mm guns of varying lengths, remained dangerous for the Israeli Shermans. However, the Shermans' modern 105mm guns were absolutely lethal. The combination of this weapon with modern French optics allowed the Shermans to engage their opponents at significantly greater ranges. Since the Wehrmacht vehicles were also virtually immobile, the Shermans were able to outmaneuver them and destroy them from the side or rear. When the Israelis captured the Syrian fortress of Tal Fakr, they were surprised to find Panzer IVs and Stuk IIIs. Because the Syrian camouflage paint was of poor quality and had cracked under the desert heat, old Wehrmacht cross markings were visible underneath. The question naturally arises, what was the reaction to the appearance of these Wehrmacht tanks? The Israelis were surprised, but officially didn't make a big deal out of it, apart from propaganda attacks against Syria to morally discredit their regime there. However, some Israeli soldiers may well have reacted strongly on an individual level, especially after they succeeded in destroying these vehicles. After all, many people serving in the Israeli army in the late 1960s had lived through the Nazi era and were still very familiar with the appearance and sounds of these vehicles. The characteristic sound of the MG-34 and MG-42 machine guns must also have stirred up dark memories. Some of the tank shells used by the Syrians even still bore official ordnance office stamps, meaning they had been produced during the Third Reich. The Israelis left many of the vehicles where they were, and since parts of the Golan Heights remain a military exclusion zone, some of these vehicles are still there today. They serve as training targets or landmarks in this rather barren region. Tourists also like to take photos in front of these vehicles or leave graffiti. However, some vehicles were recovered and taken to Israeli museums. Some examples have therefore traveled extensively. Built in Germany, captured somewhere in Europe, and stored in depots, sold to the Middle East, used in combat there, captured again, and now in Israeli museums. In both East and West Germany, the presence of the Wehrmacht vehicles was more or less ignored. Communist East Germany, through the Soviet Union, was an ally of Syria, and simply disregarded this fact. West Germany, on the other hand, made no official statement at all. Unofficially, it supplied weapons to Israel via third countries, but remained officially silent so as not to jeopardize relations with the Arab states. In France, Czechoslovakia, and Spain, there were no such concerns. The Middle East was simply a market for weapons. For Wehrmacht vehicles, this war marked the end. From 1967 onward, Wehrmacht vehicles were no longer used in combat as actual fighting vehicles. From now on, they served at best as decoys. The M51 Shermans, however, continued to serve in the Yom Kippur War of 1973, where they once again successfully engaged Soviet T-55s and T-62s.
A few finishing words.
At the end of the duel on the Golan Heights, smoking wrecks remained, burning in the sun like skeletons of a bygone era. The Panzer IV and the Sherman, two antagonists whose fates were inextricably intertwined from the mud of Normandy to the basalt of the Middle East. It is a reminder that history never truly ends, it merely changes its stage. The steel veterans of 1967 have long since been replaced by modern high-tech tanks, but their traces can still be found in the desert sand.
Thank you. This was History Lost in Time.